Today, I will talk about this work. I mean, a couple of work I've been doing with Hamad Adami, Daniel Grumiller, Shane Sheikh Jabari, Shadegan Vaitalio, and Hossein Yavartanu on this symmetry at null boundaries. And our main goal was to determine the phase space of gravitational spacetime with boundaries. So, first of all, what kind of boundaries we can have? For example, when you look at the asymptotic region of spacetime, that's a boundary. And for example, you have Scry plus, that is the null boundary of asymptotically flat spacetime. Another type of boundary that you might encounter, it's the causal boundary. For example, the horizon of a black hole, it will separate two disconnected, causally disconnected region. And why it's very crucial to study space-time with boundaries, I'll give a couple of reasons. So for example, holographic dualities. So it's the conjecture between the physics in the bulk that would be dual to a theory living on the boundary. You might also like want to address the question of why black hole have an entropy, more precisely which kind of microstate this entropy is accounting for. And you can also want to describe more precisely what is happening when you throw some matter inside of a black hole. Is this information about the matter who has been thrown maybe encoded in the horizon, maybe so on this surface, on this boundary of space-time? Another interesting physical effect is the gravitational memory effect. So if you are sitting at a boundary in the at Scry plus, in a certain vacuum state, there can be some burst of energy passing of gravitational wave, and after that you still be in the vacuum, but you have a trace of the fact that you have some flux that has been through your surface and has been shown, and also it's some quantity defined on the boundary that will take place in the description of this effect. And what I mean by phase space here, it's an ensemble of states such that they are respecting the structure of your boundary. So that I will tell you what is the behavior of the field near that boundary. And also, obviously, you have to give the dynamic that will satisfy these states. And so we want to describe this phase space. And so one way to organize the states in the phase space is through symmetries. And so we will look at the symmetry group preserving this boundary. The fact that you put a boundary in your spacetime, it means that some of the symmetry will be broken. The one namely that will break, they will, for example, move the boundary. So those won't be symmetry anymore of your theory, while the diffeomorphism that will preserve the boundary, you can have two types of them. The one who really have pure gauge, they really don't change your physics. So those one we will call it sometimes are called small and they are pure gauge, but you will have some differences that are symmetry because they preserve the boundary, but still they will change the state of your, they will change the state, meaning that they will have a physical impact. And we will talk about them later. And here I want to discuss the phase space when the boundary is a codimension one null hypersurface in the bulk. And for that, I will first of all make an argument about how many number of degrees of freedom I can expect on the due to this boundary and what are they. After, I will tell you more about the program we have settled to study this big question of describing the phase space of space-time with boundaries. And I will discuss a three-dimensional gravity example and a 4D-dimensional gravity example. And finally, I will conclude and talk a bit about further questions that we have ingoing. Please interrupt me at any stage if you want to ask questions, and So the degrees of freedom. So if we take gravity in D dimension, the metric has, in general, it's a symmetric two tensor. So you have D plus one over two component. And you can use the, among them, the component can be gauge fixed. Obviously, consistently with your boundary structure, you have this freedom of using this the gauge. And you know as well that among this component, you have d times d minus 3 over 2 that correspond to the propagating gravitons. So those ones are really bulk degrees of freedom. You cannot get rid of them by a change of coordinates. And so if you do the computation, you see that you are left with d components of the metric, that they are still there. And they will correspond to what we call boundary degrees of freedom. And in general, they will be codimension one function. And those are due to the fact that you have some symmetry that become non-trivial on the boundary. So the large gauge symmetry that I was talking previously. I must say here, you have to pay attention when you fix the gauge. As we will see later in the talk, if you choose a gauge, you can be too restrictive when you fix the gauge, and you might kill some of these d boundaries of degrees of freedom. So that is really the maximum number that you can allow. And obviously, if you make additional choices and so on, you might kill some of them. So our program, we want to systematically treat these boundary degrees of freedom that I was talking to you on a generic surface. And also later on, we would like to understand what can be the interaction with the bulk degrees of freedom. Can they be switched on by some dynamical process? For example, you think about some gravitational wave falling in the black hole, could you switch on some boundary degrees of freedom and so on and so forth. But today in this talk, I won't address that question, but I will rather talk about how we can realize this maximal number of boundary degrees of freedom that in principle can exist by this general counting argument that I just gave. We want to know what they represent, so that will be also left for further work. And today I will a tiny bit talk about bulk degrees of freedom, and you will see where they enter in the picture on the 4D example. And as often in physics, when you want to tackle that kind of ambitious problem, it's good to go first to a toy model. And we choose a model when there is, first of all, no bulk degrees of freedom, which is the case of three-dimensional Einstein gravity, because it is only topological, it has no local degrees of freedom, but it's non-trivial because, as you know, there are solutions with killing horizon. For example, if you take an ADS background, you can have BTZ black hole. So it has very interesting physics, though it is simpler than the 4D case. So let's go to 3D gravity. As I was telling you, we expect that we have d boundary degrees of freedom. So we expect three codimension one function. And I will show you a setup where I will switch on these three codimension one function. So let me put some coordinates. So I put my null hypersurface at some radial coordinate r equal to 0. I have labeled this coordinate along the null hypersurface as v. And finally, you have the transverse direction to my screen that I call phi and that I take 2 pi periodic. I start with an ansatz for the metric. This is the following. So you can see that I went to the gauge where g r equal to 0. And also I take GRA just to be a function of V and phi and not some subleading dependent on R. And all the other one, I take arbitrary function of the three coordinates. And you will see that setup allows me to switch on the maximal number, as we will see. As we want to have a null hypersurface, we have to add an extra condition to have a null hypersurface at R equal to 0. And that is to relate this F0 to other function appearing here. We also take omega to be non-zero to not having a degenerate metric on or null hypersurface. So now, as I was telling you, we want to study the symmetry that preserves the boundary structure that I just gave you. And so it means that we're looking at some killing, some vectors, such that when you act with them on a point of your phase space on the metric, you still have the same form, So you're preserving the falloff of your theory. And if you do the computation, you have the general killing is given in terms of three functions, so T, W, and Y. All of them could dimension one function, so they depend on V and phi. And all the rest function here are functions that appear in the metric. To understand a bit more, so T, what is T? T will be the zero mode of T will be the translation along the null hypersurface. The Y will be the rotation along the phi direction. And the W will be the Y transformation, so the transformation away from your surface.
What is omega? Can you say what is omega?
Yeah, omega, it's the leading term in G5-phi. So it will be the induced metric on the null hypersurface. So that's the guy here in H. So just to emphasize once again that it's not exact killing vector, but they are asymptotic killing vector, meaning the function of the metric will change under the action. And so here I give you two examples to have a bit the flavor of it. And especially the last one is interesting because you see that, for example, if you had taken a rotating frame, that co-rotating frame with the null surface, so if you go back to the metric, what does it mean? It means that this guy here, F, has to be subleading with respect to the other component of the metric, meaning that you take F0 to be zero. And you realize that if you asking to be in the co-rotating frame and you want to preserve that on your symmetry, it implies that your Y will be only a function of phi instead of being a function of V and phi. So here, this is the first example that I give you that gauge fixing can be too demanding and you can lose some physics. So that's the symmetry. So now we can study what are the algebra, and the algebra won't be only just the Lie bracket of the two vector, but we will rather use this adjust bracket because as you will see when we compute the charge later on, that will be the bracket will be relevant for the representation of the algebra. So what is this bracket? You take the normal Lie bracket of the two vector, and after you have to see how much change Xi1 under the action of Xi2. You see Xi1, so you take this vector, it depending on the quantity defined in the metric. So when you have to put how this guy will change under the action of Xi2. You do the computation and you get the following algebra. So what it is, if you look the T and the Y algebra, you realize that is the diffeomorphism of C2, where C2 is the null cylinder parameterized by V and phi. And finally, you have a semi-direct sum with this vile part of the group. So that's at the level of the symmetry. But if we want to know if the symmetry are pure gauge or not, we have to consider their generator, which is the charge. So you know that when you have some symmetry, Noether theorem tells you that you're gonna have some quantity associated to them. And here, because you have a gauge symmetry, instead of a volume charges, you will have a boundary charge. You can think of it like in Gauss's law, when you have an integral over a surface that gives you the electric charge. And now the precise definition of a pure gauge symmetry will be that its charge is zero. So it means that when you act to a state, you don't change it because it's zero. Unfortunately or not, there is no general formula to compute the charge in gravity. You can only have access to delta of Q. So what is that? It's some function of G, so one point of your phase space and the perturbation around that that point. So H is, you can think of it as delta G. And here I give you the explicit formula. And now we will evaluate that for the setup I have gave it to you. And that is the result.
Could I ask a quick question on?
Sure.
Is there What choice of symplectic form does that equation correspond to?
We have taken the Barnish-Brandt expression for the charge. So we have not added particular boundary term to the action.
There's like the Iyer-Wald one, and is it not that one? It like differs, that one differs by the boundary term from some other ones, but.
Yes, exactly. But in that case, this boundary term doesn't play a role. So Iyer-Wald and Barnish-Brandt will give the same answer. But okay. Barnish-Brandt just relies on the bulk part of the action. So in that way, it doesn't carry ambiguities because the prescription doesn't rely on boundary term you could add. Even though I agree that sometimes you have to use other prescription, but that is the prescription when you define this weakly vanishing neutral current, and after you act with contracting homotopy, and you can extract this k. And it has the same property. I mean, like the dk is equal to the symplectic current.
If you use homotopy, it depends on the Lagrangian. Like once you choose a Lagrangian, there is a unique symplectic potential, but it depends on the choice of Lagrangian. Depends sure. on the variable and the boundary term. So the Barnish-Brandt is not independent on the choice of
the Barnish-Brandt doesn't depend on the boundary term.
It does. It always. It's a unique prescription given a Lagrangian gives you a symplectic structure, but there's okay. no unique because the homotopy operator depends on the Lagrangian. I mean. You know, the results of the homotopy operator depends on what Lagrangian you're starting with.
Yeah, I agree for the bulk part, but for the boundary part, because the weakly vanishing neutral current that you define with respect to the Lagrangian, it's just the equation of motion times reducibility transformation of your symmetry. And that's where you extract the K. But I agree that with Iyer-Wald, it relies on boundary term. That I completely.
Okay. Maybe I'm thinking there's a third formulation which okay. is proposed where you use the homotopy operator of Anderson, and there's a unique symplectic potential for Lagrangian.
Okay.
It's completely clear. There's no.
Okay.
But I would imagine that Barnish-Brandt, because it uses the homotopy operator, should be. We can chat. That's a technicality, but.
Yeah, but for this
because,
case,
I mean, it's well known that the metric formulation and the first order formulation have different charges, for instance.
Yeah.
So they are the same Lagrangian, they have the same equations of motion, but they lead whether you use Barnish-Brandt or another one. So it does depend on the Lagrangian.
Yes. Okay. In that sense, I agree.
I think here you're using the Einstein-Hilbert Lagrangian. In that case, you get what you get.
Yes, exactly. Okay. Yes, exactly.
Wait, is that you said it's the Iyer-Wald one because somehow that the other term is dropping out for you?
In that case, they give both the same answer.
Okay.
In this setup that I have. But sometimes it does not, and you can wait. Okay, maybe let's talk precisely about that later. But
sure.
Okay. So we have the following charge. And what is in those charges? So you recognize here your three symmetry generators, so the W, Y, and T. And so because they have a charge associated to them, they are large. And just to give you of flavors, it's a rather complicated expression, but I would like to give you a bit of intuition about any of the letters I have used. So omega is the G55 component of the metric. So it will be the determinant of the induced metric on the underlying hypersurface. This upsilon here, it will be proportional at the V phi component, which is related to the rotation. And you have also this chi here, and it's related to the expansion of your null hypersurface. And finally, you have this gamma here, that if you take BTZ black hole and you plug it in, it's just the surface gravity of your BTZ black hole. So here I have those charges. But it's not clear yet if I can render them integrable or not. What do I mean by integrable here? I mean that I want to integrate over the phase space, so over this delta. So for that, for example, if you take W that is state independent, so delta of W equals zero, you can integrate this charge. But this one is rather complicated, and then it's not clear that you can do it. And why the integrability of the charge is important? Because if you have a charge that is integrable, it means that the charge exists, and that is exactly the Hamiltonian that will be associated with the flow generated by this symmetry. Moreover, you can see that you have the result that the non-integrability is related to the presence of a flux through your boundary. And I don't want to enter into technicalities here. But here we are in 3D, there is no local degrees of freedom. So what will be this flux? What can it be? And that's where we realize that if you do a field redefinition of your symmetry generator, you can render your charge explicitly integrable, as we're gonna see. So if you do the following redefinition, so you define three new symmetry generator hat, the hatted quantity. That's a field dependent redefinition, and you can rewrite the charge as follow. And so now if you take a slice of your spacetime or basis where this guy and this guy and this guy doesn't depend off your phase space, you can integrate the charge. Oh, sorry, what did I do? Okay, sorry. And this P is just related to the expansion, if you want, of your surface. So that will say that your boundary degrees of freedom will be labeled, your state in the phase space will be labeled by these three charges, so omega, epsilon, and P. Just the technicalities, if the expansion is zero, you may say that it's not working, but actually you just define T hat as T, and the charge will be also integrable. So now we want to look at the charge algebra. So you have this result that when you have integrable charges, the charge algebra will be given by the charge of the algebra in this adjust bracket that I had defined before, up to a central extension. If you do the computation, you have the following algebra. So you have this part between omega and P. So omega was the charge associated to the vial part. P was the part associated to the translation along the null hypersurface. And those two form an Heisenberg part of the algebra. And the epsilon was related to the rotation along the phi direction. And that is a diffeomorphism. So it's a semi-direct exam, but you may ask, is there other slicing? Can I make other choices that will give me integrable basis? And the answer is yes. And I want to present what we call the fundamental slicing, which is a base. So once again, I redefine my generator. I know I have the tildes and my charge is given by this quantity here. I can make, if I take the slicing where those guys are state independent, it's integrable. And what I get, I have really an algebra that is Heisenberg in direct sum with the diffeomorphism of the circle, as it's explicitly written here. In general, you can just, I give you just a flavor of the general method. So here you have the symmetry generator mu_i, qi are your charges. When you are taking a basis when delta mu_i is zero, that's integrable, but you can always consider a change of basis on charge of slicing when you take a q tilde, that is a function of the other charge and some derivative of them. And you can write it like that with this new mu tilde that is such a way. And just as a caveat, I just want to say that depending on the choice that you're making here, maybe you won't get an algebra out of it. So that's depend case by case. And if you want to find more details about this construction, is in the paper. But I wanted just to give you one example of a different slices. So you start by the fundamental slicing, which is Heisenberg direct product with the diff S1. You can define two currents from it, such a way, so G plus and minus, you change your symmetry generator, the charge is the following, and so that's the two algebra of the current. And from these two currents, what you can do actually, you make another change of slices, you define this L plus an F. Sorry for the detail, it's a bit complicated, but when I want to go to the end is the new algebra that you get in that case, which is 2v0 with a central charge beta plus minus. And so here raised the question about, I have generated a central charge by this change of basis, but what does it represent physically to change, to go to different slices? And that I don't have yet an answer, and it's a working project. And doing so, you can also construct, for example, from two current algebra, you can also construct the BMS tree plus DFEOs and those kind of algebra. And just last comment, here the V0 are depending on V and phi and not just on phi. So it's a bit, it's not exactly the V0 as you find in Brown and O. It's a bit more general because now the, it's an, there is an arbitrary dependence on V. Yes. Do you have?
Yeah, a question maybe slash comment. I mean, when you're saying change of basis here, for that particular thing, you're doing a twisted V0, a twisted Shugawara construction, right? Mm-hmm. And it's not necessarily a change of basis, is that you have an affine the algebra, and then in the enveloping algebra of that affine the algebra, there is a V0 descendant. Right?
Yeah,
so in that context, there's a Lie algebra, and then, you know, by looking at nonlinear combinations, you can create.
Yes.
It's not really a change of, I mean.
Yeah, that's why I changed to slicing, because at the end you ultimately change what is kept fixed on your space. That's, you're making a construction.
Well, it might be different boundary condition. For that particular thing you're here, it's just that the V0, if you have a current algebra, there's always a V0 in it. Which is the Shugawara construction.
So exactly. I agree. It's not new. What is new, I think, is to link this construction to the fact that they are related to the change of, if you want, you can also call and change of ensemble, because you change what you kept fixed on your phase space. Like to be, for example, here, like when you go to the current algebra, now it will be the epsilon plus that will be kept fixed, and now the T and the W tilde.
Yeah.
That depending on your state. So you change what is state independent or not doing so.
But sometimes there is, this is correct. Sometimes there is an order, that is, you can always get a V0 from a current algebra. Mm-hmm. But if I give you a V0 algebra, you cannot get a current algebra. So in that sense, the current algebra is, you know, is beneath. It has more structure. So you can get usually more, you know.
Yeah, and what is very great is that we get the fundamental, I mean, this Heisenberg algebra, what we call fundamental slicing or whatever. And so that allows us to build a series of algebra, as you were saying. And so now, the question is physically, what does it represent to fact to be able to go from one algebra to another one? Which physics that it encodes? And to recap what we did for the 3D case, so I show you a boundary structure when we realize the maximum number of boundary degrees of freedom. I show you that with the state-dependent redefinition of the symmetry generator, I can show that the charge can be made integrable in another slicing, another basis. I don't know how to phrase it. And also, I give you a couple of various examples of choices that will lead to various symmetry algebras. And in the paper, we also have discussed the 2D ancient dilaton gravity, but the mechanics is very similar, so I didn't want to go into that. But also we managed to switch on two codimension one function, and we also find in this Heisenberg algebra. So I found it more interesting to talk about the 4D dimensional case.
Could I ask a quick question?
I'm
not quite understanding what this slicing is. Are you actually imposing a boundary condition on the phase space, or is it?
At the moment when you integrate the charge, you're imposing a boundary condition. you.
So you're just looking at different boundary conditions, and so they wouldn't be integrable outside of.
I'm not sure it's always the same as fixing boundary condition, but I choosing if my how my generator depend of my field or not.
Yeah, but the question is, when you move the delta outside, you're saying delta of W hat or W tilde is zero. And the question is that actually restricting? Are you now like, that's a submanifold of the phase space before, or is it
not? In some cases, it's like, it's choosing, when you have a well-defined variational principle, when you choose the field dependence of your symmetry generator, it's the same to impose some condition of your field content. You have this correspondence between the two. So it means that I will choosing the field dependence of my symmetry generator, I will choose what is conical potential in the metric side. But if you don't have a well-defined variation principle, that is the case here. I mean, that we don't discuss is more that, so I cannot say yes or no. In that case, I think you can have different, they are not related. And so in that case, the structure, the boundary structure is still the same, but you choose, you kind of choose how you slice your space, because it's labeled by this symmetry. So the fact that you choose which symmetry generator, it's giving you the charges, and that will label your states in the phase space. So you're just choosing how you slice. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I was just asking from this perspective of like the general boundary conditions on the null surface, when I have to impose delta W hat equals zero, is that a non-trivial constraint, or is it like, is it cutting down your phase space or not? That's all I was asking.
Yeah, I think if you want to have a Hamiltonian, you have to say what is fixed or not at some point, because you want to integrate the charge.
Okay, so there's just some extra boundary. I would call that a boundary condition, but there's some extra condition.
Okay. You have to give them. I mean, usually what people do is like they take the symmetry generator by definition field independent from scratch. I mean, it's a bit of a hidden assumption. And I mean, it's totally valid choice. You can decide to describe your space-time keeping this this T without hat fixed. It's completely okay. But here we wanted to unlike that with this hatted choice and so on, you realize that you have no flux, which is in 3D that you would expect.
Yeah, it doesn't seem that this is a boundary condition. This is more general, because a boundary condition is a restriction of the variation of your field space. Here, what you're doing is that you're choosing a particular field dependency on the label of your symmetry generator. So when you demand that delta Q is integrable, it's not clear that you're demanding that there's zero symplectic flux, which would be very different.
Mm-hmm.
It seems more general than, because usually the boundary conditions do not involve the dual, whatever the generator label.
Okay, yeah, that's sort of what I was asking is, are you, I guess, imposing the delta W hat is zero, does that restrict any of the metric variations?
No.
Oh, okay. Okay, so then,
It might be, if you consider the problem with the variational principle included, you have some relation that will imply something on your matrix. That we can discuss it later, and I can show you where.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's very, but it's another like yeah. It's another here we don't consider the variational principle. So 4D gravity. You know that you have two bulk degrees of freedom, that's the two gravitons, and you expect four boundary degrees of freedom. We put a null surface at some coordinate r equal to zero, and we take the coordinate v r and xa that are the angles, so theta and phi. We go again to the gauge where grr is zero and gra is zero. And we have the expansion of the metric. So, okay. And because you want a null surface, you have some relation among them. And we develop also this in Taylor expansion in R. And in that case, I will go to the co-rotating frame. So I will ask that GVA at R equal to zero equals zero, because I want to illustrate a point and it will just make the computation more lengthy, but it won't add any more physical input. So that will be just easier to treat in 4D to illustrate my point. So here, omega AB, once again, it's the induced metric on your null hypersurface. So once again, you do the symmetry that preserving it, and you realize that you have, once again, this T that are the translation along your null hypersurface, the Y transformation W, and here you have Y that they are the diff S2 over your the angular part of your metric. The algebra, you have the Y transformation, and here you have, because no Y, they just depend on the angle and not anymore on V as well, because we are in the co-rotating frame. You have here just diff S2, and here you have a part of T and Y transforming among each other. What I'm going to do is to look at the charges. And so the charges, I define omega squared to be the determinant of the induced metric on your null hypersurface. I define this N that I will call shear and news, and we will see why. I mean, shear is because it's the shear of your null hypersurface, and news, we will see why in a bit. And this gamma, it's some other function. It's not important for what I want to say. If you write the charge, you see that I have my four generators here are large because they appear in the charge. And it means that I have indeed four boundary degrees of freedom. It's not the most general because I have two codimension one function and two codimension two function. But what I want to talk is to talk about the news. So that's the expression of the charge that I have put back here. And let's take the case where NAB equal to zero. And that will be the case geometrically, for example, when omega AB is just a conformal to the two sphere. And in that case, it's very suggestively written that you just have to take this one as omega hat. This one is okay, that's a bit more complicated. You change your t hat to some function of dv of omega, and you realize that you can write it like that. And if your expansion of the surface is zero, once again, you don't change t, and you have integrable charges as well. But when NAB is different of zero, it means that actually you can do the same trick on that part, but you are left with that term here. And the point is that NAB is traceless. So actually there is no way of writing something here that a scalar that you can play inside T hat that will make this guy integrable. So it means that really the fact that you have NAB, that's really responsible for the fact that your charges are not integrable. And that's what we call it news, because that will be the that is related to the that you are really a true physical flux through the surface, and also from the knowledge of what is the gravitons, you know that when in that basis and that coordinate that I use, they are in the transverse part of the induced metric, and so it's a kind of normal, they are encoded in the shear of your null hypersurface. So that's a different way of saying that, why I call it news. And so in that case, the representation theorem doesn't apply, and you cannot, you don't have integrable charges, so you cannot write what is Q, but you can use this modified bracket, the Barnish-Trossard bracket, in which you will compute the bracket of the integrable part of the charge. So in that case, it will be those guys. And that will be equal to the variation of the integrable part plus the flux, plus the non, sorry, the F is the non-integrable part, and we would see Y is the flux. And up to a central extension, as this definition has some ambiguities, the fact that you can shift the Q by some, the integrable part of the charge by some N and shift equally your non-integrable part. And if you see that that won't change the the total delta Q, that is the physical quantity that you have computed. And so the bracket is invariant under that if you change the central charge by this cosec, this condition. And if you write your, if you separate your integrable part and non-integrable part as such, you see that there is no central charge, and that actually is consistent with the result of Antoni in this, in his last paper, when he showed that the central charge is trivial under that redefinition.
Right, Céline, a question. Yeah. When you say central charge, that guy is not central in general. It's an Abelian extension. It's not a central, it doesn't commute with everybody.
It's not, yes, yes, I agree. Yes, you're right, yes. Okay. Yeah, in the BMS4, it's not, I mean, it's, yes, you're right. So just, I don't want to present the proof here, but in the case when you have no central charge and that your field are transforming under the time generator, so your psi is just partial v, it's just given by the time derivative of phi. If you plug that to the modified bracket that I have presented to you, you realize that you get this equation. So the variation of your, the integrable part of the charge along the time is given by the flux. And so, I mean, by the non-integrable part, so which is why we call it physically the flux. It's another way of saying why is the flux here? And sorry if I have been using flux all the time, but until now, I mean, it was the non-integrable part of the charge. Here, I hope I convince you that it is physically the flux through the surface. So I want to say a word about what happens if you impose further boundary condition, I mean, further condition on your metric element, on your boundary structure that you have. So often the eta has been put to one, and it means that you want to preserve that under your symmetry generator. And so actually it implies that your Vi transformation will be related to your translation generator. So instead of having four independent symmetry generators, you're just having three of them. And another condition that can be imposed, if you, for example, you are interested in the case where you have a black hole and you want to study its horizon, and you, so you want to look at that type of physical process, you would like maybe to ask that the surface gravity of your black hole is constant. So if you take the generator of this, the null hypersurface, and you have, you will ask that kappa is equal to zero, and that actually will give you that your, the V dependence of your translation is not independent anymore, is not arbitrary anymore, is fixed by this, by this. And actually, if you impose one and two, you find back some symmetry that have been found previously in the literature by the net hole and also by Chandrasekharan and Prabhu. Yes, so to recap what we have been, what we have done, that we have switched on the maximal number of boundary degrees of freedom in three dimensions, so D function of codimension one. I show you that there exists always an integrable basis in three dimensions, actually more than one. Integrable slicing, sorry. And one of them is this fundamental slicing when you get this Heisenberg indirect sum with the diff S D minus two. And in 4D, I hope I've convinced you that the presence of the news make the charge non-integrable no matter what you're doing. So because you have actually a physical flux, and also that if you choose some boundary condition, you will kill some of the boundary degrees of freedom, which is, but it's completely okay. And but so yeah, when you do that, you know what you're doing, and so it's fine. And that leads us to the proposal we have made in this paper, is that when you have no local degrees of freedom or no local degrees of freedom passing through the boundary, you will always find this fundamental slicing where the charge are integrable, and the proof is in progress. And in the last minute I have, I want to discuss some of the questions that we have, and we're still working on that, and that it's a very interesting question. So what does slicing represent physically? What do we do when we fix when we change this basis? And also, like, in the literature, have been boundary condition who leads to that algebra or to another one. And it will be great to better understand what we do when we change the slices. And that's the question. Also, another question would be, what is happening at infinity? Here I have put a surface in the bulk. And this conjecture will be, I mean, at infinity, the stuff might be different because the metric might diverge, I mean, diverge in general. And actually, this is a working project that hopefully will be out in November with Romain Ruzicconi, where we study the bond degage in three dimension and in two dimension. And we show that indeed this conjecture holds again in this case. And also probably because you will have divergences, you will have to renormalize, and so you will have to consider boundary term and so on. When we do not change the slices, I mean, if I start from the beginning and I give you this this charge that they look non-integrable, I mean, they are if you take the slices when your symmetry generator doesn't depend on the field, but what this flux represents? Why we have, it seems that we have a flux, and that's another question that we would like to answer. And also I have to stress a point that we have integrable charges, but the V dependence of our charges is completely arbitrary, meaning that they are not conserved. And so that is the point right now, but it's actually normal that it's not conserved and that there is an arbitrary V dependence, because we never discuss of the boundary term we can add and the dynamics of these boundary degrees of freedom. And once we give this dynamic, the V dependence will be at least predicted. And all of that also in relation, I think would be interesting to see we relate with the edge modes and where the boundary dynamics has been studied in more details. And the generalization to the time-like surfaces, I think there is no conceptual differences that will happen, but we'll have to do it explicitly to be sure about that. So thanks for your attention, and let me know if you have any question.
Right, let's thank Celine. And we can start with the questions. More questions?
Yeah, I can start. When you have the field dependent generators, did you say they're like this modified bracket of them, does that close the adjusted bracket?
Yes, it closes.
It closes on the set of generators that you picked?
Yeah, always.
Okay.
I'm not sure. I mean, I'm saying, is it, just now I'm not sure if it's it always works in the case I've been studying, but now from the top of my head, I don't remember it's always the case or not. But
I think it would be kind of an integrability condition on the phase space for that to close. So if you really do have a slicing, I think I'm getting what you're talking about. You sort of are picking a way to define your generators at different points in the phase space in a specific way, but you're doing it sort of consistently. So So you really do have this slicing of the face space. So I guess in that case, I would expect them to close. But yeah, so I was just wondering about that closure property in general.
But these are just brackets. It's modified when you look at the charge algebra. I mean, if you don't use this adjust bracket, if you do this the proof for the representation theorem, you will see that you need there is an extra piece. So that's why you have to make it.
Right. And well, yeah, that adjusted bracket is actually just the Lie bracket on field space. So
yeah, which makes more sense. I mean, yeah. Okay. Yeah. It makes sense to use that one.
Yeah.
I have a question about the Weyl generator. So you're saying it's always you always have a DFS 2 times an Eisenberg algebra, right? One of these Eisenberg algebra is the usual translation, and then there's this kind of Weyl generator. And that's kind of interesting. So if I understand properly, this Weyl generator, because usually when people work in Bondi coordinates, so they fix, you know, the radial direction to be null. That's one thing. Mm-hmm. And then they add an extra condition, which is, let's say, Newman-Hunting, right? Demanding that the scale of the normal metric is fixed. And so you're saying that when you do that, you kill one degree of freedom, right? It's very common in, so you're telling me that at asymptotic infinity, presumably, people have also missed that Eisenberg factor.
Yeah. And to add to that, recently, a couple of days ago, there have been this paper on the Weyl transformation in 3D, and they turn on all this this Weyl transformation as well. So they have it there at infinity with a holographic perspective. But so it's So there also, they realize that indeed, if you fix too much the gauge, you lose a symmetry.
Yeah, so that's kind of, and that's really the source of, in your simple slicing, that's really the source of your, that's where the central charge comes in, right? Between the translation and the radial. I mean, the Weyl translation is really just the radial difference.
Mm-hmm. Exactly, yes.
Yeah. And it's always, so it's very nice that it's kind of generic on a null surface at least.
Yeah, but
the central charge is always there.
Yeah, but I guess that if you take boundary condition that kills some of it, this basis won't be available. I mean, it's available because we switch the maximal number, and so you have a lot of freedom actually, because you have those three arbitrary function of V and phi, I mean of codimension one, that you can play with. So
but isn't that the logic? You should understand what is the maximal symmetry, right? Not the minimal symmetry.
Yeah.
At the end of the day,
I agree.
You know, getting less symmetry is, you won't understand what is really the full symmetry. Right?
Yeah, I think.
Actually, this point you made at the end, the charges weren't conserved. That confused me a little bit, because I would have said an integrable charge is conserved under a flow, or maybe that's just not right.
It's conserved imply integrable, but integrable doesn't apply in conserved.
Okay, so it just doesn't commute with whatever time translation you're actually talking about that leads to the non-conservation. Yeah, okay.
But I would expect that when you have an integrable charge, the non-conservation is somehow just some kind of adjoint action in your Lie algebra. It cannot move you out of your, it cannot change the Casimir of the Lie algebra or something like that. There must be some conditions that it's not an arbitrary motion. I mean, it's not, when you have a group, it's okay that, you know, I'm thinking about the earlier top, you know, you have a group and then it's natural to have a motion on the group, right? Which is given by the earlier top. But that motion, so I think motion on a symmetry group is very natural, but that motion usually has some restriction. For instance, it cannot change the Casimir.
Mm-hmm.
Is that, So there should be some restriction in that motion for integrable charges, as always.
Yes. Yes. Yeah, but I have no other comment to make on that.
So you don't know if that flux is just a change of the parameter of the transformation?
I don't know, and because one part will be, the point is like the symmetry generator also have a arbitrary V dependence and the charge as well.
So which one is arbitrary? The symmetry generator. That guy. So when you link it to the flux, you have to choose a particular time dependence of the symmetry labels, the symmetry generator.
Yes. So there that will be fixed, but I'm not sure how. Oh, you will do. And another thing also that, it's the fact that when you look at the dt of your du, dv, sorry, of my charges, before dv was part of my symmetry generator. While here, because I have made this change of slicing, actually dv is not part anymore of my symmetry.
So I guess what I would expect is that, in general, there is a flux, but this flux, I would expect that it's always possible to choose a V dependence of the symmetry generator to kill that flux. So that is, all the flux comes from just a change of representative of my charge in my Lie algebra. Does that make sense? That's what the holotop is about. The holotop is just, right?
I have to think about it, but I think you're right. I think it's in there. I mean, it's in there.
I mean, otherwise, I don't know. I mean, maybe it's not true, but then otherwise I would have a hard time to understand.
I mean, I don't know yet also how to relate this this basis where you have some non-integrable part of the charge. I mean, probably it's because it's not the proper slicing or something like that. I mean, to this using of this modified bracket that overcome the fact that the charge are not integrable, but it's not the proper bracket on your phase space. So how to relate those two and the change of slicing and stuff. So it's, I cannot say more.
Yeah. In fact, what about the news? Is the news really defined unambiguously, or you can always, what you call the radiative part is, in the way you present it, it looks like the news is kind of unique.
No, it's not. I mean, it's as soon as you have a non-integrable part of your charge, you have always this ambiguity.
Mm-hmm.
And I fix it asking that, I fix it in the such that the central charge is zero. I mean, the central extension is zero. And you have your result when it's in principle. I mean, apparently, I mean, the result you have shown in generality, Anthony you show that it's always, there is always a choice. I mean, the composition of integrable and non-integrable such that you have a trivial central charge,
right? Yeah, although we weren't really viewing it as an ambiguity. So I don't know where you come down on that. I thought it changes, in the case of integrable generators though, I thought it changes like whether or not the charge is integrable. How you pick that piece?
No, because actually, you have delta Q will be Q integrable, delta Q integrable plus some F, and you can always have the freedom to, if you want partial, change the delta of places. You can always add some piece to the integrable part and resubtract to the non-integrable part. And so it will, here I have let me show you here. I have suggestingly written something like here, and that will be the non-integrable part. But I can always add delta of, I don't know, like this guy times omega and changing, like putting the delta out of this expansion here. And that will be a completely valuable choice. Who tells me where I put the delta? I mean, you can always, and the only thing that I have who can tell me which n I should choose, which decomposition, is the fact that I have a central zero central charge. I don't know if it's clear what I'm saying. I mean, your delta Q is
right. I know for certain in the case that you have like where you're trying to find like a boundary condition. So yeah, maybe it's the fact that you don't need to impose any additional boundary conditions. It's just, I know in the case that you have to impose a boundary condition to make the charges integrable, I know there was like a unique choice in the example I was thinking of for this K term, and I wasn't able to shift it anymore.
Okay.
I had to find a boundary condition to make the charges integrable, and you know, and then you have to satisfy Hamilton's equations to define what the charge actually is. It's a little more complicated because we weren't using field dependent, or less, I don't know. It's a little different because we weren't doing field dependent generators.
But here, I mean, in that case, this ambiguities with the N, I'm not making any field dependent thing anymore. Look after what I have as a non-integrable part. There is this N, this news, but there is another part that I don't know. I mean, there is there. And it's just that particular choices of what I've designed to put where give me an algebra without a central extension. And so I say I choose I choose the decomposition in which it's explicit that this central extension doesn't have any importance. And why I choose this basis? It's because I have this result that I have not proved, but it's a couple of lines if you use the definition. That if you have not, I mean, if you have a central charge here, you have a plus C. Plus K, sorry, I call it K.
Right.
Plus K. So it's the interpretation of the non-integrable part as the flux may be more like, it's not straightforward as it is in this case. And that's why I'm taking that decomposition.
Sorry, in that equation you're just showing, so it doesn't seem that it depends on the V dependence of Xi. So to write that equation, you have chosen a specific V dependence, no? What's the?
In that case, I have this result come from, you take this modified bracket and you evaluate it on Xi equal DV, one of your generator. So I didn't have changed basis, right? Slicing of my field generator, because here I have my charges, they are non-integrable, so I proceed as such. So here, if you take Xi to be DV and Chi arbitrary, you have one part that is the flux, and here you see that this guy and this guy will combine to make just the DV of the total charge, because one part will act, this delta will act on the field, and okay, should have been Chi who is DV and Xi who is arbitrary, because that will just make DV of the field, and this guy here will, the algebra will just be conveniently just DV of Chi, and so the two will combine and just give you the total derivative of the full charge. I mean, I can write, I can show
you. You're saying this equation is true for any V dependence of Xi?
Yeah.
So where is the, because on the right hand side I don't see the V dependence of Xi.
Q, it's like Xi I of V and Phi times your QI of V and Phi. And the part when you have the DV of Xi will come from this guy here. Mm-hmm. And the part when you have the DV of the QI that will make the total derivative, it's coming from here.
Okay, so maybe I guess my question is in the next slide. It's just me. Okay. I don't see where the dV of psi comes from in the right hand side.
This one.
No, in the
yes,
in the second equation. So the yes. Left hand side, it's okay. On the right hand side, where is the dV of psi? There should be a psi dot somewhere. Where does that?
No, it's the flux is associated to psi. Chi equal dV.
Yeah, the flux doesn't depend on psi.
It does.
There's no on the right hand side. There's no derivative of psi. That's what I'm saying.
Derivative of psi, but.
But on the left hand side, there is a term that depends on. Maybe it's too technical, but the left hand side is essentially psi dot q plus psi q dot, right?
Yes.
Okay. So I'm trying to figure out where the
psi. Just then. Okay. Delta psi of j. You can have some psi dot here in okay. Delta psi j. Like, for example, let me go back when I was giving an example of. No, beginning. Yes, here you see you have some t, you have dv of t, for example.
Okay, so your delta psi because it's the modified delta psi, it contains the field derivative or something. Okay.
Yeah, it's yes.
Okay, exactly. Okay. So that's taken into account.
Yeah.
Okay.
Hey, I'm just wondering if the boundary flux that you derived the non-integrable charge, is it gapless or gapped?
That's a good question. Do you mean that is there a solution for which this flux is zero? Is that your question, actually?
Or rather, when we think about the its spectrum, right? The dispersion goes to zero. The charge operator?
Yes.
Operator for the flux, I mean. Yeah.
It's not possible to put it to zero. Uh-huh. And I tell you why. It's because, okay, this you can switch off, but you cannot. In the simplest case, you can have omega is the determinant of the induced metric of your null hypothesis that we take to be non-zero.
Mm-hmm.
And so you see here, okay, gamma, you can put it to zero, eta, you can put it to one if you want. You can find a solution in your phase space that has that, but you will still be left with some omega. And you asking maybe we can also take dV of omega to be zero. And indeed, in that case, the flux will be zero. Yes. So I think the issue here, the issue is that you when you take a solution in your phase space, you can put a lot of function to be zero, but omega essentially. However, you have to allow for any variation around that solution. So delta gamma is arbitrary, and that guy as well, and that guy as well.
Right.
So the problem is like, he cannot be zero for any arbitrary. I mean, for some variation, it will be zero, but not for all of them. So even in the simplest solution, you will have some flux because you allow in the phase space to have this guy to be able to move. I mean, to be different of zero. After you can play the game when you restrict all of that and you're saying, oh, I'm in a phase space when that has to be zero no matter what, but that will imply that you lose symmetries and so on and so forth, and you have to redo the whole analysis. So it's a bit different than the 4D case asymptotically flat. Mm-hmm. When you have a place when you have the flux who is zero genuinely. So it's different than the Waldzu path procedure in that respect. I don't know if you are referring to that. But we couldn't apply Waldzu path in our case because we don't meet this condition that the flux has to be zero for some point of the phase space.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you.
Is there any other question?
Well, I, I do have, if we dig into, if you go back to the equation you were showing me earlier in the variation, right? No, the, ah, okay, the so that's, the, that's the flux, but the delta G, you were showing me the,
yeah, the equations for delta yes. G.
So I guess there you can decide to choose the T dependence and the Y dependence such that this delta vanish, right?
So
that in some sense kind of a preferred evolution equation for the T.
Sure.
It might not mean, so the question, but that might not mean that the flux delta G vanished because of the N term. Even if I put all these terms to zero, these ones.
The point is that
maybe it's too technical, but.
Yeah, no, but I think the point is like, if you ask that delta eta is to be something, it means that you impose a boundary condition, and so you will constrain your generator and so on and so forth. And like, probably
it's not a boundary condition, it's just a choice of T dependence, V dependence of T. Eta could still be totally arbitrary.
Yes, so you
because
could
choose. It's an equation that depends on T dot. So it's essentially an equation that says T dot equal blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, but it depends of your on delta eta. So if you want to keep delta eta arbitrary, you cannot solve for T dot.
Yeah, of course. No. But what I'm saying is that there's always, because usually if you want to do some kind of analysis of, let's say, memory effect or et cetera, you do have to choose a preferred choice of if you look at the soft theorems, et cetera, they're always proven in the context where the label of the translation, the V dependence of the label is chosen in a particular manner.
Right. Yes.
And,
yes.
And so there's always a reference kind of choice of frame of how you turn out, your, right? And I'm saying but here it's...
That's exactly. And that is related to the fact that they impose, I mean, usually in semantically BMS4, I mean, the original paper, they impose boundary condition, which we have not. So just to make another link with maybe something in 3D, yeah. It's like Brown and O.
I'm talking more about the Strominger analysis. So if you want an Campaglia analysis, that is, if you want to link the soft theorems to conservation of charge or flux of charge,
mm-hmm.
To do that, you have to choose the V dependence of T and Y in a particular manner.
Okay.
Right. And that's because these ones are kind of arbitrary. And then that's how you can relate.
Okay.
Because you see, the gravitational field is about eta. Here, it's about eta, W, whatever. But Y and T are just parameters that labels your choice of frames of charge, right?
Yes, but you take the inverse road, because usually here we say what we want to have when we want to keep fixed and the metric. And so that implies some evolution and some constraint on the type of function you can get as the symmetry generator. But I guess you can also do the reverse. I mean,
here you still have the ambiguity of what is T dot and Y dot, right? That's when, like, the V dependence of your time of your symmetry generator
mm-hmm.
is still something you have to choose at the end of the day, too, right? These ones in
why can I not keep it arbitrary?
Yeah, but then you can't, you cannot really, I don't see how you can deduce any memory effect from there, because it's totally arbitrary, right? If you say the change in charge is due to the change in the label of the charge, then I don't have any handle on my physics, because the label of the charge is not part of the physics. What's part of the physics is the components of the metric. It's the charge itself, right? So in other, you always have to choose fix a V dependence. You're not losing anything. You're not losing any degrees of freedom as long as you're not restricting the charge on the sphere, right?
Mm-hmm. No. I see what you mean. Yeah, I agree. You have to keep the dynamics. Yeah. Yes.
I mean, otherwise it's, you could keep it arbitrary, but then otherwise it seems that I don't know what to deduce from the conservation of charge, right? Then I can get anything.
Yeah, sure.
It's too, I'm just That's saying if I recall how Strominger relate these things, first he fixed essentially demands that the label of the charge do not change in time, okay? And then he can, once you have that, you fix it, it's like a choice of frame, then you can, then you can compare different charges and different fluxes, right?
I agree.
Okay, I think we had plenty of questions. Maybe we should thank Celine again.